This is gonna hurt. It's time, for the Suffering Podcast.
On any given day, tragedy can strike. Frequently, it comes without any signs or warnings. Before you know it, you're in the thick of things, and you have to rely on your instinctual reactions to pull you through. Planning for trauma is like planning for death. You always know there is a distinct possibility, but you're never sure when, where, or how it's going to happen. You do the best you can to make sure that everything is in place to survive another day. After a traumatic incident, there is always room for improvement, but only after you've gone through can you start to see the holes in how you prepared. For those who have survived, it is their job to prepare the next generation. I'm Kevin Donaldson here with Mike Falasin. On this episode of the Suffering Podcast, we welcome Mike Arena to talk about the suffering of officer-involved shootings. Mike knows all too well about the trials and tribulations once that happens.
Mike, I think both Mike's here now.
Yes, unfortunate. It's an unfortunate thing, but Mike, thanks so much for coming all this way. We got South Jersey blood in the house.
Nah, I appreciate you guys having me, and South Jersey where it's at, and just going to throw that one out there. It's definitely poor girl.
I'm going to go on that. Thank you. Finally.
Until it comes to high school football, North Jersey is where it's at.
I don't know. Holy Spirit was parochial A champs for a long time. That's my high school.
Yeah, Southern Regional Rams, man. I got to stick with it, dude. I'm sorry.
Seton Hall Prep, Bergen Catholic, Don Bosco.
Yeah, but they Paramus Catholic. They recruit
like 35 at 35 grand a year for high school.
For football players.
That's why your taxes are like 20 grand up here.
Before we go any further, let's throw a big shout out to our marquee sponsor. That's Toyota of Hackensack. We don't trust anybody as officers, but we do trust Toyota of Hackensack, and we all have a guy as police officers. Like, hey, who's your car guy?
I'm a car guy, but cops got guys for everything.
Yes, I
got a guy.
Well, what do you need? Our guy is Toyota of Hackensack, so go to toyotahackensack.com, let them find you a car. So, Mike, every week we take a question from our audience. This week's question comes from Carly76. Since you've retired, what brings you joy? And I thought this was an interesting question because if you were a police officer the same way Mike and I were, that job brought us a lot of joy. It brought us a lot of pain, too, but it brought us a lot of joy. And when you retire, especially right after you retire, you're like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
So since you retire, what brings you joy?
So like you said, you know, when you're a cop, a lot of things bring you joy. Helping people brings you joy. That's what we all got into this job to be able to do. And since my retirement, I'm actually starting a nonprofit. It's called the Officer Support Initiative, and that brings me the most joy. Speaking with other cops that have gone through a lot of traumatic incidents around the country, from literally California to Maine to everywhere, speaking with them on a daily basis and just trying to, you know, understand them and let them express their stories to me. That's what brings me joy.
Mike, what do you think?
Well, you know what? I mean, as gay as it sounds,
sorry, Mark. Mark, do you understand that we are very well supported by the gay and lesbian community, the LGBTQ community? Okay. We have our cards.
Okay, as straight as it sounds, one of the things that, I mean, this podcast brings me joy. Yes. You know, it really does. I mean, because we're out there helping people. And when people come up to us and say, you know, you guys are doing a great job, you're really helping people. And that brings me joy. But the other thing is I got into volunteer coaching. You know, I was coaching, you know, I was volunteer coach with high school football and high school baseball. And it's our way. Like you said, I mean, we're public servants.
That's it.
You know, you're giving back to the community. Right. And my way to give back to the community was to help out with, you know, football and baseball.
Yeah,
and
through the youth, definitely.
That brought me a lot of joy.
You know, obviously, like you, it's this show has brought me a lot of joy. But aside from helping people, which I think we all can agree that really does make you feel good, I enjoy the creativity of it. Right. I enjoy being able to make something out of nothing. And, you know, there's three people sitting around a table who've never met face-to-face before, and we're trying to put out some information that's going to be valuable to somebody else, so you're basically making something out of nothing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty cool. But, you know, we spoke about it on our Instagram Live, and thank you for joining in on our Instagram Live.
Got it.
As you were driving.
Yeah, it was that interesting advertisement that was put out. We talked about that. Mike and I both had the opportunity to just somebody reaching out, random person reaching out. And, you know, whenever times get tough and stuff starts bringing you down and you're like, why the heck am I working my ass off? Why am I doing this stuff? That's why.
Yeah.
That one thing. And I'm sure you're getting that with
that reward. Yeah. That, you know, just a constant grind. You're always like, Is something going to come out of this? Is something going to come out of this? And then you get that phone call from somebody and you're like, that was, everything's well worth it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Kevin, I mean, we talk about all the time, like Gene Halberger. Mm-hmm. Remember the first time he came in, he was, his shoulders were down and he was, next time he came in, he was, you know, upright and because he got it off his chest.
You can tell a lot from somebody from just their body language.
Absolutely. That's why we don't do Zoom, you know, any kind of video or Zoom.
I love that about that. I love that about this. Because you guys get up close and in personal with the
You got to read someone.
Yeah.
You got to read someone and see like where they're at in their head.
Definitely.
Well, we had a discussion about that when we first made contact with each other through Frankie from Street Cop Training.
Yeah.
And I explained it to him. And we've had the opportunity to get certain guests on here through Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've done the Zoom podcast. I don't like it. I'll do it when it's necessary, but you cut people off.
Right.
I can see when you're about to speak. I can watch you taking a breath and okay, it's my turn to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
And we could see when you're feeling down and
you can really read that emotion off somebody.
And you're also able to pull things out of people.
You remember we did that one Zoom podcast when we were down in Florida?
Lynn and Will. Yeah. Lynn and Will. It wasn't Will and Grace.
It kept coming in and going out.
Yeah.
Coming in and going out.
Yeah, you got like that delay sometimes.
Listen, they're great people and they have a great podcast. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I listen to them all the time, but it was just a nightmare.
Yeah. Not to mention we were exhausted. So, Carly, thank
and
you.
And it was the only nice day in Florida, too. Yeah, we're stuck doing
it. It was the only day we could wear shorts. Carly, thank you so much for sending that one in. Keep sending in your questions, and we will try to get them on the air. So I looked into you quite a bit, looked through your – it's just like every guest that comes here. That's basically right. What I do is I look at – your social media, because social media is going to tell me the narrative that you want to say, and then I'll go in and do the Google search, like everybody else. But I want you to tell our audience a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so my name is Mike Arena. I'm 31 years old. I'm from Manahawkin, New Jersey. Go South Jersey.
Yes.
You're not an Eagles fan too, are you?
No, I'm a Giant fan, Ranger fan, Yankee fan. Sorry, pal.
All right, get out.
Yeah.
Giant fan, and you're in South Jersey?
Yeah, man.
It's like we flip-flopped.
I know. And a Yankee fan.
And a Ranger fan. Like, you're not a Flyer fan, are you?
Of course.
Oh, man, your heart gets broken every year. I'm sorry.
Well, one of my good friends used to play for the Flyers. So all right. That's
understandable.
Mike knows exactly who I'm talking about, Adam Burt.
Right.
But, you know, and my mom, so one of the guys that lives down there is Dave Schultz. I don't know if you know who Dave Schultz was.
I do not know.
Dave Schultz has the record for the most penalty box time. As a matter of fact, he sang a song, The Penalty Box.
He was with the Broad Street Bullies.
Bullies. So he's a legendary fighter.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who protected Bobby Clark in the Flyers. So my mom actually does his hair.
Ah, there you go.
And I walk in one day, and there's Dave Schultz, one of the toughest men in hockey, getting a pedicure.
Really?
And I looked at him, and he's such a genuinely nice guy.
Right.
I go, And I walk in playing Penalty Box on my phone. If you look, you got to look it up. So look it up. Dave Schultz, Penalty Box. It's kind of a funny song.
Yeah.
And
I mean, those hockey skates got to do a lot to your toenails. So, you know, now that they retired, they're going to get pedicures.
And he's always smiling too. I'm like, what happened to Dave Schultz? Dave the Hammer.
He left it all on the ice, man. That's it.
I guess. So other than being a New York fan, which I don't know about that one. We're going to have to work on that.
Give it some time. You'll like it in a little bit.
So you grew up in Manahawkin. So
yeah.
Spent time where? So did you go to the LBI section?
Yeah. So Manahawkin is literally like 2 miles away from LBI. So
with the worst strawberry flies in the planet.
Yes, they're bad, especially with like the west wind and everything like that. It's a killer right there.
We don't have them in North Jersey beaches.
Yeah, it's because the only thing around here is like hills and trees.
You go to like Point Pleasant, Belmar. We don't have those strawberry flies.
No. So it's, the LBI's got the greenheads. Greenheads are bad in themselves. The strawberry flies in Manahawkin, they'll eat you alive.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. But yeah, so I mean, started.
That's a great promotion for the Jersey Shore. I appreciate you really promoting the Jersey Shore like
Manahawkin's
that.
Manahawkin's far away from Jersey Shore.
Yeah. It's like half Pine Barrens, half. It's like there's no boardwalk. There's nothing there. It's just, it's relaxation or Pine Barrens.
Flat.
One of the two. Yeah.
Super flat.
Exactly.
Yeah. So how was it growing up in Manahawkin?
It was good. I loved it. I love growing up there, played high school football there. It's a very, very small, quiet town. Everybody knows everybody, which is a good and a bad thing. I mean, I'm sure you guys understand that. You just go to the supermarket, you see five people you know, whoever you graduated high school with or whatever the case may be.
It's one of those towns that nobody leaves.
Yeah, yeah, you ain't kidding.
Yeah, nobody leaves. It's the same people who grew up playing junior league football are the same people working at the supermarket, the gas station, wherever right. else is right. close by.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I grew up doing that. And then how I started my career in law enforcement, I actually graduated high school. I became a special in Point Pleasant Beach. I was a special up there for 2 summers. And then I got hired by State Corrections, took the civil service test.
Now, stop with the special portion right. of it. So when I used to go home for college, I'd work in Avalon, mm-hmm. work at Jack's Place right on Ocean Drive.
Right.
So Avalon had 2 cops in the winter and they had 30 specials right. in the summer. Because obviously you get the Pennsylvania traffic coming 100%. In there. What was it like? Did you get looked at differently as a special?
Definitely. Yeah. Because a lot of people from North Jersey would come down to the shore and, you know, they know you're part-time. They know you're like summer cops.
Just call them square badges.
Right, exactly. Like rent-a-cops or whatever the case may be. So you got heckled a lot. But at the end of the day, you know, especially working in a beach town like that, when all the bars close and everything like that, you're doing the same thing as the full-time officers do. Like you're rolling around with drunk idiots. You know, you're dealing with all that stupid domestic stuff because once you put alcohol involved and partying all night and someone gets into an argument, it turns into fist throwing. And, you know, you guys know that gamut.
Well, they're not going to identify whether your badge says special.
Never.
Or police.
No. It doesn't say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some departments have like a patch on your arm that's like special too, or whatever the case may be. So, like I said, I did that for a little bit and then took the civil service test, got picked up by State Corrections. I worked in Trenton State Prison for a little bit.
With the salad tosser.
It was fun. It was.
That's where he is, right?
Yes.
The salad tosser?
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
And if you don't know who the salad tosser is, all you got to do is watch the Chris Rock special and it'll scare the shit out of you. He says something like, HBO put out this documentary about Trenton State Prison, and he goes, you don't want to put kids in scared straight, just put them in front of the salad tosser guy.
Yeah.
And I don't even want to tell you what salad tossing is. If you don't know, look it up.
Use your imagination, people.
I don't want to know.
But that's also where Kuklinski was.
Yes, and also where Jamal Crockham is. He was the guy that took Chris Romaltos' life, the Lakewood cop.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he was actually, he was on my unit when I first got hired there. And so you just have a lot of monsters. A lot of monsters in there. And I enjoyed it for a little bit because, you know, I loved throwing hands. You know what I mean? I was like, if you're going to pay me to get in fights, here we go.
But, I mean, these guys are guys that have nothing to lose.
Absolutely nothing. They're in there for their entire lives.
They get sentenced to a life term in prison.
Mm-hmm.
What do they got to lose?
Right.
What, are you going to get into a fight with a corrections officer and get another life term?
All they do is get thrown into, like, whatever our detention unit was, right? I think it was, like, 7 left at that time. And it's like our ad seg. They go in there for like 2 or 3 months. Same thing, 3 hots and a cot. And they go right back to Gen Pop. So they got really nothing to lose.
Yeah.
So they don't care if they smack you in the face or whatever the case may be. So I enjoyed that.
Getting smacked in the face. Yeah, right.
With a sock of batteries.
Right. Yeah. I did that for a few years. And then it got to the point where I was like, man, this sucks. Like when you work in state prison, you basically get treated like an inmate. You got to go through.
I was gonna say you're more of a prisoner than they
100%,
are.
100%, yeah.
Because the prisoners could roam, and like Gen Pop, they could roam. You have your assignment, and you got
to
stay right
there.
You're
stuck in your unit for 8 hours, right? And when you get into the prison, you need to go through a body scanner. You got to go through a metal detector, so you can't bring anything in, obviously, right? You're dead to the world for 8 hours. You can't bring your own food in, so you got to eat what the inmates make you in the ODR, which is the officer's dining room. So
yeah, that's something I would do. I
just, right, listen, right.
That's intermittent fasting at its best, right?
100%. So I work 2 to 10 shifts. So I gotta either intermittent fast or you gotta eat something. So some guys eat the food. I chose not to. And if I did make it, I would make like a cheese quesadilla. I'm like, how much could you really screw this up? You know what I mean? This stuff comes packaged. Hopefully, no one screws with it. So that's what I would really kind of run with. And I did that for a few years. And then my buddy who works down in Prince George's County, Maryland, called me and he was like, hey, man, we're hiring. If you want to come down to be a county police officer, I was like, I want to go back to the road. So I left State Corrections, went down there, went to a 3rd police academy. Worked down in PG for a little over 3 years. And then all my buddies that were working in beach towns like Point Beach and, you know, down AC and all that area. They were like, dude, you got to come back up here, man. We're making good money up here. $100,000 sit on a beach. I was like, you know what? I'll transfer up. So I transferred up. I got hired by Stockton PD off the state civil service list again. Worked there for like a little over a year.
That's about 3 miles from where I grew up.
Right. Right. Yes. Because you know the area. Definitely. So I worked there for about a year. I got put on the county SWAT team down in Atlanta County. And then I transferred to Ventnor and I finished my career out in Ventnor.
Yeah. So Ventnor used to be like, it was the people who didn't want to live in Atlantic City anymore, right. The richer people.
Yes.
But and wanted to go to Atlantic City all the time.
They wanted to be in that city.
What's it, about a mile away, a mile south of Atlantic City?
It's borders. It's borders.
Yeah, borders.
It's
so right
when
there.
You get
that one little lake right there.
When you see the Knife and Fork, which is on the corner where Pacific and Atlantic meet,
yep.
You're in Ventnor.
Mm-hmm.
And Ventnor was always a very, they always had a very tough football team growing up.
Well, if you're coming down, what's it, the Atlantic City
Expressway.
You look to the right, it's Ventnor.
Yes.
To the left, it's Atlantic City.
You're correct. Yes. Yep.
So that's an interesting area. And then when you go further south through Margate,
Newport,
then you're starting to
get. It keeps getting like richer and richer as you go down.
And that, you know what? It'll change just like Ventnor changed. When I grew up, yes. Ventnor was super rich.
We call it like the cigarette, right? So Atlantic City would be like all the tobacco. And then Ventnor's going to be your filter. Right? And then everything goes in Margate and Longport's all the nice stuff.
But eventually that filter gets dirty.
That filter gets dirtier. It gets bigger and bigger, longer and longer. I mean, and Margate's dealing with it too. It's just progressively going down. You can't stop. Unfortunately, you can't stop what Atlantic City's turning into. It's a train and it's going to derail at some point. And,
you know,
unfortunately, that's it.
I was down there not too long ago. And, you know, growing up in Atlantic City, we would go, it was different. When I was a kid, like we used to ride down Pacific Avenue and look at the hookers. Well, the hookers aren't really there anymore because they don't need to be out on the street.
Right. And dead.
Yeah. It's just like, it's like the town that time forgot. It's all check cashing places and bail bond stuff.
And you probably saw it like from where you grew up. I mean, you probably have the best perspective of it. I mean, you grew up there and now you're seeing it, what it is firsthand.
So it got nice for a while.
Right.
So Gardner's Basin was the inlet.
Yep.
And there were certain times of the day, at night, you never went into the inlet. Like me, I could never go into the inlet.
Mm.
I had a lot of friends, and they told me, they're like, stay out of the inlet at night. Now it's Gardner's Basin, and last time I was down there, I think I took my kids on like a dolphin watch. I go, what the hell happened? What is this crap?
Right.
You know, this was a place you didn't go to. Now you go to Ducktown. Ducktown was always the really nice area, but you know, I took my wife a couple years. I noticed this probably 15 years ago. I took my wife to Angeloni's, which I hear is closing.
Yep, it is.
I took my wife to Angeloni's on Georgia Avenue, and I couldn't believe it. Like Nikki Scarfo's house, there's people out on the stoop drinking. I go, what the hell is going on here? And, you know, I follow South Jersey news, but I know Ventnor is the same way. I'm starting to read more and more stuff about Ventnor.
Yeah, it is. You know, that filter, like you said, is just it's getting clogged. And it's unfortunate because Ventnor is a nice place, and they do have a lot of nice residents. My cousin actually lives there. And it's just unfortunate what it's turning into. It's like the residents of Atlantic City know that they can prey on the people of Ventnor. It's like, you know, there's nothing in Atlantic City anymore because, you know, everybody's just either locking their doors or their car's been stolen 25 times and all their windows are blown out anyway. So let's just go start stealing cars, robbing people, burglarizing houses.
So Kev, you said you used to ride down the street on your bike looking at hookers?
Not my bike. It was, we were in a car.
You were looking at hookers.
Yo, we were looking at hookers.
You were just looking.
Yes, I was just looking because if you saw it back then.
All right, listen.
So there was.
I want to get this straight.
There was. I'm going to tell you how good I was. So there was where Showboat is. There was one, and we used to call her Orca, and she was
a hooker.
Yeah, she was a big gal. All right, she was a very sturdy gal.
How'd you fit her in a car with all you guys?
We had a Subaru Brat with the seats in the back.
With a hatchback,
yeah. Blew that suspension.
Orca
out.
Hung out the hatchback.
Remember the seats in the back with the handles. So, but that girl, as big as she was always busy.
Oh, I'm sure.
Always busy because people had a thing for her. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing. But the city's changing, and guess what? As they started moving people out of the inlet, and I knew it was going to happen,
right.
You're going to see because the inlet was the worst, and you're going to see just people go. And a lot of them went to Pleasantville, and Pleasantville was never nice. Actually, it was nice in the 70s, but wasn't nice when I grew up. And you know, they want to stay near the city, so they go to Ventnor because it's parents wanting to get their kids out of a bad element.
Right.
The problem is the bad element follows those kids because they keep the same friends.
Yes. And then you got like, you know, like Ventnor goes to Holy Spirit and goes to Atlantic City and everything like that. So you got families that want to move out because they want to have a better life because they know the city's just going to shit. So they do go to Ventnor because they don't want to take their kids out of school. Right. And it just, everything just kind of follows and trickles down the hill.
That happened up here. So you have the inner cities, and really good people. There's a lot of good people in the inner city. Yeah, first of all, I want to state that very clearly. But there's a lot of garbage as well. And the parents wanted a better life for their kids. The only affordable housing they could get is out in the Poconos. They could get a house for like $75,000, right. $60,000. So they would move out there, trying to do the mm-hmm. right thing. The problem is the bad element that was hanging around their kids went out there to visit.
Yes.
And they would. Yep, it was a big problem.
Well, see, that's the thing in the Poconos, because, you know, my ex-in-laws had a house up there, and you see it all the time. You get these kids that, you know, the suburban kids, they move up to the Poconos with their parents. They kept the same friends. Mm-hmm. Now the parents are still working in the New York, New Jersey area. Mm-hmm. They're out of the house for 12, 15 hours a day.
Yeah, and they don't know what's going on.
So they went up to the Pocono house. Yep. And
that's exactly what happened. You hit the nail right on the head. And that it's an unfortunate scenario, yeah. But it happens way too often.
So when you got into police work, when you wanted to get into police work, you always wanted to be a street cop, or is there a specialty that you wanted to get involved in?
To be honest, I never really wanted to be a cop at all. You know what I mean? I'm pretty sure you guys have heard that before.
Well, that's me.
You
know, Brett,
I've never wanted to be a cop. It was just something that one of my buddies who still works in Point Pleasant Beach to this day was like, dude, you should just come up here, man. Just work a summer or two here, see how you like it. You know, I feel like you'd be good at it. And I started, and I was like, hey, you know what? I am pretty good at this. You know, and then I was like, you know what? Let's do corrections, because that seems fun at the time. I mean, I was way wrong, but I was like, yeah, that's great.
Well, what year are you talking about with when you got on the corrections?
So I graduated the Corrections Academy in 2012.
Okay. And how old were you, though?
I was 20.
I was going to say you were so young.
20, yeah.
Yeah, but that's a home run, because you're in the pension system.
I started as a special when I was 19. And then, I started in the pension when I was 20. Yeah.
Wow. So that's a big deal. Like, yeah. That's a really, really big deal. Mm-hmm. And support for the Suffering Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who's the best in men's below-the-waist grooming.
Their products are precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped Performance Package is the ultimate men's hygiene bundle.
Inside the package, you'll find the Lawnmower 4.0, Weed Whacker Ear Nose Hair Trimmer, and the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant.
And we also got the Crop Reviver Ball Toner. This thing is a life changer. Along with that,
boxer briefs.
I'm going to tell you what, these are like high quality boxer briefs, and this is no joke. I'm not saying this just because their Manscaped sent it to us. These are nice. My boys are going to be quite happy in there.
And you can't tell Kevin's wearing them under the table right now. And we also have a nice travel package.
Join over 8 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer just for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code TSP at manscaped.com.
Jesus Christ, that's a lot of balls.
You know, it's a good selling point with police. It's like, hey, you got a pension, you got benefits, right. the pay is good.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to be sold on it. But
tell a 20-year-old kid that, they're like, yes.
Yeah, right. You're looking for a job. You want that brass ring at the end of when you hit top pay.
Right.
And now the top pays are so spread out now, it's even scarier. But
I know. There's a department I just heard a couple months ago. Was it 191 that's up here?
Bergen County is the highest paid in all of New Jersey.
Yeah.
I heard Edison's 191.
Edison's messed up.
Edison, yeah.
you could take that one.
190.
Listen, I'll go up to Alpine, which is like the richest town in all of New Jersey. Those cops are probably making the same money, and they don't do anything.
I drive a 2022 vehicle, mm-hmm. and I drive a decent vehicle. If I drove my vehicle through Alpine, the cops would stop me. It's
really?
Happened.
Really? Yeah. Why? Because it's not like a $200,000 Mercedes?
They know everybody.
Oh, yeah, it's that close-knit.
They know everybody, and they're ultra-rich, and I'm not ultra-rich.
Right.
So. Well, I started my career in the Bergen County Sheriff's Department. We used to have to go serve process papers up in Alpine. You had to go to the police department there, because mm-hmm. there's no numbers on the house. They'd put a police officer in your car, and you'd say, I got to go to this person's house, and they'd bring you down the road. Okay, make right here, make left there, and that's their house there.
Damn.
Walk up this long driveway.
It's where Eddie Murphy used to live.
Yeah. Mike Tyson.
Wow. Mike Tyson, yeah.
That's CC Sabathia.
Hey, well, the rich, just that's it. I mean, I guess if you can afford, you know, chauffeur service like that, yeah. I mean, I can imagine what the taxes are up there.
Oh, God. The taxes.
$30,000
for an average house.
Right.
For
damn. Average
house. Yeah, but I always say that, you know, if your house is $30,000, that means you're making millions of dollars because you could have bought that house.
Yeah. You know? So, what was the draw to police work, especially when you got on the road?
The draw was the adrenaline rush, and the draw was, it's cliche as it's going to sound, it was just being out there and helping people. I've always kind of been that person growing up. I've always been the person that's, you know, something goes on in school or like something like that. Like, hey, man, you know, call Mike. Mike will take care of it. You know, if you need something, give me a call. I'll come, you know, help him move a couch or whatever the case may be. I was always that person growing up. And I found that niche in police work, you know, going to somebody's worst day multiple times a day. I found that to be rewarding. And that's what really kept me in it. And that's what really hurt when I walked away.
Now, did any of those calls that you want to imagine in your departments? I know Prince George isn't the best of areas.
Nah, it's a shithole too. It went from literally like state prison and then state prison without the bars.
And then you went to Stockton, which was babysitting.
Unbelievable climate change. And I was tearing my hair out. I could have great people at Stockton. You know, there's very good officers there, but I was just pulling my hair out. It just wasn't working.
Well, I know people who transfer, and this happens a lot, when people transfer from the inner cities, the pay in the suburbs is better. Mm-hmm. They transfer from the inner cities going to the suburbs, and I know they go back.
To
the inner cities.
Yeah, because and that's why I went to Ventnor.
Because they're bored as hell.
Yeah. Right. You're 100% right. Like, I went from throwing fists with the worst criminals in the state, in state prison, and throughout, you know, the country, because they all get shipped there, to, you know, locking up some of the worst people in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area, and then to sitting on a college campus with college kids drinking beer and me trying to bust their balls about that. And that wasn't flying. So I was like, well, Atlantic City's not hiring right now, but Ventnor civil service. So we're going to do that transfer right over.
I don't know whether I could take the attitudes of college students anymore.
I couldn't.
Because they do think they have the world all figured out. 100%. Listen, man, you're 20 years old.
Right.
You don't know shit. I'm not going to sit here and tell you don't know shit, but you don't know shit.
And sometimes you just want to let them fall on their face so they can learn.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things I was kind of butting heads with my administration. I was like, you know what? Screw them. If they want to go and do this dumb shit, let them do it. You know, they want to go walk down Pomona Road and get picked off by a car because they want to walk down the road drunk at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know how dark that road is.
Pomona Road, by the way, is... like, there are no street lights. There is nothing.
It's ridiculous.
The cars just fly down there. Yeah.
It's like Frogger. And especially all the deer that are down there. It's like, yeah. So I'm like, you know what? Let them go walk down the road. If they want to make this decision, make this decision.
That's,
you know,
a new thing, by the way, the deer. They weren't around much. Yeah, that's probably within the last 20, 25 years. They were around, but they weren't around that much.
Yeah, there's a lot down there now.
Yeah. It's up here. Wait, just be careful driving home.
Yeah, no kidding.
So your career's going pretty good.
Yeah.
Were you at SWAT?
I was.
You were at SWAT with Ventnor?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, he worked with my brother.
I did.
Was my head smaller than my brother's at least?
A little bit.
A little bit. Not much.
Yeah.
A little bit. And I got a big head. I know it. But how was SWAT? Do you like that?
I loved it. And that was one of my goals when I first got onto just in law enforcement. My goal was to never to make rank. I didn't really care about being a supervisor, mainly because I wanted to be there with the guys. I wanted to be in the shit. And I found that as my career progressed, I'm like, I want to do SWAT. I want to do what a lot of guys can't do or strive to do. I'm always that person looking for, you know, the best ability that I can create for myself. Some guys like to just kind of, you know, coast along
through their career.
Right. And that wasn't me.
You know, it's same thing came out. We had Jose Medina in here last week, Team APC. He's SWAT through and through, and now he's been training SWAT for quite some time.
21 years.
I hear the same words coming out of your mouth that came out of his mouth as far as the love for it and the drive and the adrenaline for it. Now, there was one incident where SWAT was called in Ventnor.
Mm-hmm.
It was a shooting incident.
Yes.
It wasn't your particular incident.
It was not,
which we'll get into. Were you on that one?
I was not.
Yeah.
That was before I joined the team, but that incident was a call out for an armed subject, same kind of thing. He was barricaded inside his house. And unfortunately, he opened the door with the shotgun, started putting rounds down range at the officers, and they had to take the appropriate action and neutralize him.
Yeah, he went down.
Yeah.
But I know there was a lot of lawsuits on that one.
Very, very much. Yeah.
Which is a shame. Somebody's shooting at you, you can't shoot back.
Yes. I mean, I'm pretty sure you guys know that firsthand. So, yeah, it's
I got on the SWAT team in November of 2000. I was on the team until the day I retired.
How rewarding was that, right?
Oh,
like,
fantastic.
when you first get on, it's like, when I first took the like SWAT test, I actually failed it the first time. I missed it by one round, by maybe like half of an inch. Because, like, you know, you gotta, when you do your shooting qualifications, they have to be on target. They gotta be in that square. And the way AC Atlantic County does it, they do your PT test and then your shooting test right after it. So you're fatigued from your PT test. From, yeah.
And there's a reason they do that.
100%. Yep. You got to be able to shoot under pressure. You got to be able to shoot tired. And you got the rest of the guys watching you and everything like that. So all that pressure's on. And I failed my first time. And I remember one of the team guys came up to me and he was like, dude, you're good. You got this. Just come back, take a deep breath, come back in a couple of days and crush this. And that's what I did. It was that confidence that they had in me. And ever since then, I've tried to instill that confidence on everybody I've ever talked to, guys that have joined the team or guys that want to join the team or anything like that. I've always tried to mentor them, like, all because you fail now does not mean you have to fail through everything. You can continue to keep bettering yourself and just have that. You just got to have that mindset to continue to keep pushing forward, that never out of the fight mindset. Because if you quit, you quit.
With our SWAT team, we used to go in full gear.
Same thing.
We'd have to run a mile.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do the reverse qualifying course. We go up to handgun retention.
Right. Yep.
You know, and then 3 yard line, 5 yard line, 10 yard line.
It's the same thing. Yep.
And you had to pass that.
Yeah. It, and we had to do it.
Running a full mile in your
in gear.
Full gear.
Have to. Yep.
And then come back and fight. And
so our PT test was a mile, full gear, jump a 6 foot fence, do a 200 pound dummy drag, the sledgehammer hit. Got to put your gas mask on, bear crawl 50 yards, and then you got to run up 4 stories, run down 4 stories, pick up a ram, run back up 4 stories, run down, and then you're onto the shooting course. And same thing, you're up at weapons retention, and you're going back five yards under time.
And it wasn't like, okay, you know, now I'm going to move back to the five. It was like, you know, you went handgun retention, then 3 yard line, and then 5 yard line.
Yes.
And it was like
rapid,
snap, snap, snap.
Rapid.
Snap,
and yeah. you, there's like, I tell all the guys, hold on. If you, it's two-handed point shooting from inside of like the 12 yard line. Like if you're looking for your sights, you're going to run out of time. Like you need to be that accurate. Mm.
Grab onto your front sight and go.
That's it. Right.
But that was something of a purpose to you. And you stayed there until you left the job, correct? You stay with
SWAT? No. So we want to have in like manpower issues. So I just want to come off the team. Of course, that's just
manpower issues.
Right.
Unfortunately, that's taken away from services like SWAT that are really needed. So then we get into your reason why you're here
mm-hmm.
today.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you tell us about this shooting?
Yeah. So, like I said, I was about 10 years on the job at the time. It was August 6th, 2020.
That's actually my brother's birthday.
Oh, is it? So it was, and I've said this before, it was kind of like a normal day. And I know everybody kind of says that when traumatic shit happens.
They all start off
crazy, right?
Slow, right?
Right.
Slow day?
Slow.
Where you're sitting there wishing something happened, you know, give me something to go on to.
That's exactly how it was. We had a storm roll in the morning and it was a hell of a storm. And I remember like so bad that all the storm drains were kind of clogging up. And you being on the island, like, you know, that drainage system, sewer system sucks.
There's not much pitch on it. Because actually drainage is something I'm involved with now in my current profession. And it's so flat down there that they actually have to create undulation in the road in order to get the drainage.
Right. So all the sewer, like all the sewer grates were clogging up and everything like that. So everything was flooding. And you guys know, both being cops, that nothing really goes on when it's raining out. You're just sitting there in your car, you're directing traffic, you're doing something.
That's the best time to speed. Because no cop wants to get out of the car, write a ticket when it's raining.
When I first got on, they say a good cop never gets wet.
Yes.
Is never tired and never goes hungry.
And those are the words to live by. If anybody's listening to this who's not a cop or thinking about being one, that's very wise words. Mm-hmm. So it was very slow in the morning. We had a storm roll in. And then it was just a very oddly slow day. And I remember we got a call for a stolen vehicle. Our town was split up into 3 wards, 1st ward, 2nd ward, 3rd ward. I was in the 1st ward. My partner, Pierre, was in the 3rd ward. We get a stolen motor vehicle out of the Acme in Ventnor. So we go there to speak with the caller. Caller's not there. Dispatch is like, hey, the caller left, but he'll come back. And he's going to just come to the police station to file a report. So I was like, okay, this is BS, because I was there to help him canvas the area, you know, see what I can help do. So I leave, and as I'm coming out of the Acme parking lot, I go to make a left on Wellington Ave. And as I make the left, I see this guy and this two-door coupe, I think it was BMW, Mercedes, whatever it was. He's pointing at me and pointing back. And I didn't know what the hell this guy was talking about. So I make the left, and I get behind him at the light. I roll down the window. I'm like, hey, buddy, what's up? You know, what can I help you out with? He's like, I don't know what's going on back there, but there's a postal truck driver in the middle of the road, and this guy's running around it like crazy. I think he's trying to steal it. So I was like, all right, here we go. Like, it's like 2 o'clock. I'm like, all right, here, this is here we go. Here comes the waterfall of all the bullshit today. So I flip a Yui and I throw on the lights and I start going down. And as I start going down, the call comes over dispatch for an erratic male in the middle of the road. I call it out. I'm like, hey, listen, you know, I'm en route there right now. The call is going to be in Atlantic City. So Atlantic City and Ventnor, they meet up, right? They're bordering towns. So West End and Wellington Avenue meet up, and it is a horizontal road. It's a 2-lane highway, which you know probably very well.
I know where it is.
Yep. So I get there and I see the postal truck driver, and I don't see him directly. I don't see him immediately. I call out with it. And I told my dispatch, I'm like, call Atlantic City. This is their bag of shit right now. Have them start coming this way.
You're always willing to push it over the border.
Listen, you guys are both cops. It's exactly how it works.
So shoveling the shit.
It's on your side of the road. So you
take it. Could be a dead body laying there. I'm like, and you're nudging it over there.
Before Atlantic City gets here, you kick the foot over the line.
You ain't kidding, man. That's exactly how it happened. And every cop listening to this, you're laughing because you know that's exactly how that works.
So a quick story about that one. Quick little sidebar. We had one of our towns who were notoriously lazy, who my father-in-law work there.
Right.
So anyway, we have one intersection where there's three towns meet in one little place. So car goes off the road, the woman's plastered drunk.
Right.
And one of their cops shows up and says, nah, it's yours. And I'm like, nah, it's yours. And, no, it's yours. It's definitely yours. I'm like, dickhead, look under her car. She ran over the sign that said,
right,
welcome to, I won't say the town.
Yeah. But that's exactly how that happens. It's just, we're just trying to push it off. So I get there, I see the postal truck driver. And I go up and I speak with him. And as I'm speaking with him, I can see out of my peripheral, like my eye, I'm like, all right, I see the male. He's walking along the roadway there. So the postal truck driver's like, dude, I don't know what's going on. If this guy's trying to steal my truck, he just jumped in there. He's bleeding from the neck. I don't know what's going on. He says he's trying to get hit by a car or he wants to steal my car. I'm not sure. I was like, all right, man, not a problem. Close the door, lock it. I'll be right back. So I start walking up to him. And this was, you know, during the time where we had to wear the masks, right? Mm-hmm. So as I'm walking up, I was like, you know, I'm not wearing this. It's hot. This is not happening right now. It's August. I'm sweating enough and I don't need to be wearing this. So I put it back in my pocket and I started walking up to him and I was like, hey man, you know, what can I do, man? Like, how can I help you? Just, why don't you take a seat for me? And I start just giving him just normal commands. Like, just take a seat. How can I help you? Like, what's going on? Are you hurt? And he turns to me, and when he turns to me, I can see he has a laceration from like where his left earlobe is all the way down to the front of his neck. He slices jugular. So I call it out immediately. I was like, you know, start me an ambo because he's bleeding from the neck. And as he does that, he then turns towards me, and I see that there's a broken glass bottle in his hand. And I don't know if you guys are drinkers or anything like that, but you know those big Jack Daniel bottles? Like they're almost like gag gifts kind of thing? That's what it was. It was that big, thick, sharded glass.
Yeah, the thick glass bottles.
Right. And he had the base of it, the neck of it, and he broke it. So it was about 4.5 inches, and that's what was sticking out of his hand. Turns to me, and he looks at me, and he's like, fuck you, he starts walking towards me, and I'm like, just drop the bottle.
When he started yelling at you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, there are some people in this world that can take that and just sort of maintain calm and everything. I always had a problem, although I actually had to consciously, every time, just keep in my head.
Kind of like decompress.
Yeah, because somebody screaming in your face, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, you're like, fuck me, fuck you. You know,
it rattles you.
Especially when you're there to help them,
and
they're saying, fuck you.
You got to be a very select individual, and that's what a lot of police officers are, to be able to take that.
But if you're thinking back and in your mind, at what point did this become something more of an EDP, like, which is an emotionally disturbed person? Because obviously, you know there's something wrong with the guy. Either he's on something, he's drunk, whatever it is, something's going on with him, where it started to become an aggressive situation.
Well, so as that progressed, I had one of my class twos come up, and as we talked about the special role before, they're not covered under the like PBA. They're just, something happens, it's not going to end up good for them. So I had him block traffic. I continue to keep giving him commands. My partners start coming up. And kind of like how you said, like, when does this become an EDP? Is we continue to keep giving him the commands to drop the bottle. And he's like, he just keeps telling us, fuck you. you got to shoot me. I want to fucking die. And when those words start flying out of his mouth, I'm like, this is definitely going to be a suicide cop.
Suicide by cop, man.
Right. He's like, I'm hurting. Fuck you. Shoot me. Kill me. The whole gamut. He gets to a point where he's like, okay, all I want is a bottle of water. So me and my partner are like, okay, here we go. Like, we're able to, this is our rapport. This is our in right now. If we can get this in, we're good. We get him the bottle of water. We throw it to him. He then drops the bottle, hit the glass bottle, picks up the water bottle like this, picks it up, drinks it, says, fuck this. I want to die. Drops it, then picks up the glass bottle again. And then immediately I knew that this was a suicide by cop. And this guy was going to do any means necessary, include stab one of us to be able to have one of us shoot him. So we go through that for right around about 10 minutes of just constantly telling him to drop the bottle. There's a guy on YouTube that I was telling you guys about. He counted it 228 times. I personally told him to drop the bottle.
You know, I watched a video and I was going to start trying to count.
Right.
Just
228 times. Yep. So,
you know, at the end here, we'll play a little clip of it just so everybody understands. But if I were to play the whole clip, it would just be you telling him,
drop the bottle.
Drop the bottle. We're going to get you
for
help.
12 and a half minutes.
We'll get you. We drop the bottle. We're going to get you. We're going to get you help.
Mm-hmm.
And you did everything right. Like you weren't aggressive with him. You didn't escalate the situation.
Right.
You called for backup. You called for an ambulance. Mm-hmm. Like you hit all the markers, and that's really important because it's a stressful situation. It's
right.
A high stress situation. You know, shit at any moment's going to go sideways.
Yeah.
Now you keep giving him demands, keep giving him demands. Did he show any signs of lucidity?
Absolutely not. He just kept coming and coming and coming, and it was to the point where, you know, we get behind one of the vehicles, and I turn him to my partner. He's about 2-3 yards away from me, and I tell him, I was like, Jimmy, listen, if we got to take this shot, we got to move him to the left, because West End and Wellington Ave, like I said, it's a horizontal two-lane road, so we have traffic blocked off at both ends. So we can't take the shot going horizontally. If one of us misses, that round's going to continue downrange.
The round doesn't stop right. after the target.
100%. Yeah. So a 9mm travels anywhere like close to about 1,200 feet per second. So if one of us miss, God forbid, that round's going to continue downrange. We have both traffic blocked in both directions. You have cops on either side. So we need to be accurate if we got to take this shot. And that's where my SWAT training came in, 100%. So I tell my partner, we got to move him towards the backstop to use the bay as a backstop. Unfortunately, we don't get to that position. He keeps pushing us to not be able to do that. Atlantic City does show up finally, and they have Taser. I'm sure you guys saw it. They go to deploy the Taser. Taser doesn't work. If you guys know Tasers, you know that if they're charged, they will have like that 0-0 that come up. You watch that video, nothing happens. I don't know if it's a responsibility issue on them to not charge the Tasers. That's above my pay grade. But regardless, Taser does not go off. He sees this. And you hear it in the video. He's like, I can eat a Taser. I can eat a fucking Taser. Here we go. So at that point, I'm in front of one of the vehicles.
Was there any other, did anybody pull out OC spray or anything?
No. We couldn't get that close to him because if he was kept charging towards us and we kept creating distance. Like, you guys are both cops. You know, like the 30-foot rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be able to unholster and, you know, create distance as a subject's approaching you. They can clear that gap in 30 feet. Faster than most officers can unholster and put effective rounds down.
Back in the academy, we were told 21 feet.
Right.
So it's
21, 30,
thing, yeah.
Whatever case
yeah.
may be. Right.
I think now it's actually.
I think it's shorter than that.
It was 20. No, it was 21, but I think now they said it was 27.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's around that, that foot rule. So we are creating distance. We can't get close to him. He keeps telling us, he's like, I'm going to fucking stab you. I'm going to stab you. And he's looking at me because I'm the first one on the scene. I was the first one to make contact with him. So he continues to keep looking at me. So when they go to the point of Taser, it doesn't work. He lets out this blood-curdling scream and starts running at me and my partner. And so my partner's on the left of me. I shoot lefty. My partner shoots righty. So I move my partner to the right of me, and he starts running at us. And as he starts running at us, we're backpedaling. There's like a spool wire. They were just doing like the power lines. So the spool wire, we got to kind of trample ourselves over. We got to high leg or high step that over. And he's coming at us, running at us. We're backpedaling. And as we're backpedaling, creating distance, a civilian opens the door.
I saw that.
Yeah, I saw that in the video.
They open the door. And he gets out. So we go for about what's the length of like a shoulder? 5 feet, 5.5 feet, whatever it is, 6 feet,
depending on where it is.
Yeah. So he opens the door. So that cuts that in half. So now, as he's chasing towards us with a broken bottle, telling us he's going to stab us, we're backpedaling, and now we have a civilian who then cuts that 5.5-6 foot gap in half. Now we need to make sure our rounds are accurate.
So I want everybody to think about for a moment all these things that you have to deal with.
Going through your mind all in a split second.
And on top of, like, if you watch it, there is officers in the background, and I'm screaming at them to get out of that view, get out of that view. And you
crossfire situation.
Right. You can actually watch them trickle from behind him, because if one of us missed these rounds, like we just talked about, that round's going to continue and travel.
So you have to, so your primary concern is yourself, obviously. Then I don't, you want to go home to your family.
All right.
So you got to watch out for your safety. Then you got this EDP over here that needs some help, some serious help. But now there's a dangerous situation. So you have to look out for your safety and the officer's safety around. And then if there is a shot that has to be taken, you have to try to get an angle so it doesn't hit another car or another officer. And all this while making sure that you're in communication with dispatch and you're in communication with the officers and making sure your angles are right. Is it going to be a justified shoot in this? And so when stuff goes wrong in shootings and you got to sit in front of a grand jury, this is all the stuff that comes out. And you'll get some stupid questions too, like, why don't you shoot him in the leg? Why don't you shoot him in the arm?
Because the grand jury has months to deliberate over something that took a split second.
Split second to make a decision that you have so many lives that you are responsible for at that time.
And here's the biggest responsibility. That bullet leaves that gun, it's on you.
100%. Yep. You are liable for every round that comes out of that chamber.
Correct.
And that's a lot of cops that are listening to this know that, but there are some that don't understand that. No matter what, if that round travels through that person and hits somebody else, like a 3-year-old in the back of the head, you need to know your backstop and beyond, right? It's a big SWAT thing.
You go to the range, you shoot the paper targets, and there's a big sand hill behind it. Your bullet stops right there. Out on the street, your bullet don't stop.
Exactly. And that's why cops carry hollow points.
You're dating yourself, man.
Yeah, you got that right.
Oh, there's still big berms in the back.
No, there's up here, there are no more. The last—
what are they, all indoors?
The last outdoor range was the one that I qualified at in Caldwell. By the old jail.
You guys are Richie Rich up here.
No, it's just there's no room left.
Oh, that's true, too.
There's no room left for that stuff.
I haven't qualified in over 7 years. So.
Yeah.
When it changed a little bit.
First qualify, and it didn't matter. So it's nice now indoor ranges because now you qualify under controlled conditions. Before, if it was raining, you wore a poncho. That's what it,
that's for what it was on the team. We had to.
Was it? Every 6 months. So it was in the winter, in the summer.
Yep. Right. Yeah. And we also used to have to start at the 75 in a prone.
Okay.
Yeah.
With your rifle?
No.
With your handgun?
With your handgun. Or was it 50?
Just to see?
Was it 75 or 50?
I would think it'd be 50.
That was 50.
It was 50, yeah. 50. We used to do 50 in a prone.
And just to see if you were able to...
No, it was...
They would score that?
They would score it.
Damn.
They would score it. Yeah, it was no joke.
Wow.
Not to say that, but I'm not taking a 50-yard shot.
You should not. If an officer takes, and like you guys both have cops, you know that, but if an officer takes a shot from 25 yards... You better be on point.
Well, you know, the other thing is, too,
your max.
You qualify with your off-duty weapon.
Yeah.
Right?
Try doing that with a snub-nose 38.
Yep.
You qualify with your off-duty weapon from 25 yards. Mm-hmm. You do the regular, what's it, PQC qualifying course.
Yeah.
If you're off-duty and you shoot someone from 25 yards away,
you might
as well throw your gun at them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You ain't never seeing that gun again.
Ever. It's gone.
Off-duty training should be like from 10 yards and in.
Yeah. Well, that's what, you know, what is it? I think that's like, 87% of officer-involved shootings are from 7 yards or in or something like that. Because we're always in close quarters with these individuals.
CQBs.
Yeah.
So at what point did this become the shots inevitable?
Yeah. So when he starts running us, the civilian opens the door. I start screaming at the guys behind to get out of the view. Instinctively... Me and my partner just planted our foot and we pressed off the rounds. It was probably almost like close to being simultaneously. Like I pressed mine off and I heard his right behind me, and he's a righty and I'm a lefty. So he just blew out my ear because he was literally that close to me. So the shots come out, 6 shots come out, all of them land.
You just shot 6 times or
no. Collectively. So collectively 6 shots come out. I fire 4 of them. He drops. As he drops, he still has the bottle in his hand. So if you watch the video, you know, we're still giving him commands, drop the bottle. He does take a deep breath, gasp, opens his hand. And that's when I know, okay, he's out of this. And I say it on camera. I'm like, he's out of it. You know, I tell my dispatch, you know, shots fired, start an ambulance, the whole 9 yards. We get to him, we glove up, and we start, we got to cuff him, right? So we cuff him, and I don't know at the time that he slit his wrist. But so whatever, we cuff him up, we turn him over, and we're doing anything that we can to be able to save his life at that point.
Render first aid.
Right. We get all the trauma kits out. We're plugging holes. We're doing all this. The body camera shuts off at that point. And it shuts off because that's the AG's rendition of it cuts off right there. So we're doing everything that we can to be able to keep him alive. He's kind of going in and out. We're trying to put water in him, all this.
Is he talking to you?
Barely. Yeah. I mean, it's coming. Like, I can see where the rounds hit. We shot him from maybe about four yards away.
Yeah. You did it until the threat stopped.
Right. So, I can see the holes in his shirt. I can see the cavity in his back. I go to put my hand on his back. He's kind of sitting up, and I can feel my hand go into his back. So I know it's not going to be good. We're calling for the ambulance. The ambulance can't get there because we blocked off the roads. So collectively, me and my partners, we all looked at each other, and without even saying anything, we picked him up and we ran him 40 yards to the stretcher. We get him on the stretcher, and it was funny because it's not funny, but there was a video that came out of us running him, and they were like, look at these cops. They're just running him to get him out of the camera angle because they don't want to see what we did to him. What we were doing was trying to save his life by running him 40 yards, a 200-pound man running him 40 yards to a stretcher to get the medical care that he needed. So we get him on the stretcher. The medic looks at me, and she's like, what happened? And my initial instinct was like, are you fucking serious right now? Like, were you just here? Did you just watch this whole entire thing? She's like, I can't work on him. He's cuffed. So I was like, okay, fine. We flip him over. And that's when I saw that he slit his wrist. And when we cuffed him, the ratcheting part of the cuff went into his wrist. And we got to uncuff him. So as I'm trying to get the cuff key in there, all of his flesh and blood is coagulated inside of the cuff key. So I can't get it out. So I'm now peeling the cuff out of his wrist because it went underneath his skin. I was able to finally get it off, threw it to the side. They took him off to the ambulance. They took him off in the ambulance to ACMC, and that was the last I saw of him.
So when did he die?
He died on the way.
He died on the way there.
Yeah.
So what I want to do, and again, this is going to be another one of those episodes where we're going to catch a lot of crap.
You know what? You're going to do this again, aren't you?
I have to because what happens next and your troubles that happen next pertain to a lot with your incident. And it's something that is heart-wrenching. You know, taking somebody's life is heart-wrenching enough.
Yeah.
What you went through is stressful, and it just adds on top of already a bad situation. What I also want to do is I want to play a short clip of this incident as much as we think we can play, so everybody gets an idea of how much Mike really did try to de-escalate this situation, because I have seen it. It's public knowledge.
I've watched it a couple times. It's
hard to watch. It's very, very hard to watch because here's a guy.
You know what? As you're on it, have you watched it a couple times since?
I trained myself to watch it a lot.
Is it hard to watch for you?
No, it's not. It was in the beginning, but I knew this is something that I needed to do in my life, and this is something I needed to conquer. So I made sure as soon as it came out, I watched it.
Because like I said, talking to Kevin a lot about both of our incidents, Kevin had a real hard time going back to his scene.
That took me a while.
He had a real hard time going back to his scene.
It took me
almost 10 years.
Took me about a little over two years.
Yeah. See, I go past my scene all the time.
I think it's unavoidable.
Right up the street from my house.
I've been past your scene. It's unavoidable. Otherwise, you can't get it home. So we're gonna end this portion of this here. I want to bring you back next week so we can complete this.
I mean, if you really care about coming back up to North Jersey next week.
Traffic's a little bit bad, but I'll take care. Don't worry about that.
That's going to do it for part one of the suffering of Officer and Bob shooting. Don't forget to follow us on all social media, LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Clapper. Follow Mike at Mike_Fillets. Follow me at Real Kevin Donaldson. And of course, follow the Suffering Podcast. Don't forget, you can always watch you can always listen before you watch. All of our audio episodes come out on Sunday. And
tell them to comment, please.
Please comment, because we do read everyone. And don't forget, go to Popple.com for a digital business card. Put in TSP20 for a 20% discount. And while we're signing off, I want you to watch what Mike went through with this small little clip we have for you. We'll see you on the next episode.
behind me. Grab this one.
Yo, we don't want to do this, man. Stop. 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 Stop the bottle. Stop. Stop the bottle. Drop it. Drop the bottle. Drop it. District 1, shots fired. District 1, shots fired. Stay in the car.
Somebody have a clone.
Drop the bottle. He's dumb.
He's got the bottle in his hand.
Drop the bottle.
Drop it.
Drop the bottle. We can help you. Drop it.
Drop the bottle.
Drop the bottle. Open your hand. Open your hand.
Open the hand.
All right. He's out. He's out of these. He's out.